The Night Before Christmas, A Good Omens Podvic, written by Entangled Now and read by Job. Summary: the situation is dire in Santa's workshop. It's 4 days to Christmas, and there's something very wrong with the sleigh. There's only one solution: bring in one of Krampus's elves, a mechanical genius who might be the only person who can save Christmas. Four days until Christmas. The situation is very serious. Aziraphale had spent the last few hours in the workshop squeezing his hands together and fretting about it, and not even the rhythmic jingle of Christmas music being piped through the place is enough to lift his mood. How could the sleigh be broken? It's never been broken before. He's worked here for almost 600 years, and every Christmas has gone off like clockwork. But now, here they are, with 4 days to go until the most important night of the year, and the familiar polished shine of Santa's sleigh is cold and unresponsive. No matter how many times they try and coax it to hum into life. Aziraphale doesn't pretend to understand how exactly it works. He specializes in wooden toys and musical instruments, not magical machinery. The only thing he knows is that it's half mechanical, half magical, and half... No, he's run out of halves. This just proves his point. The normally hectic bustle and synchronized dance of toy-making and present-wrapping is entirely absent, though the Christmas jingles through the overhead speakers continue in a way that he can't help but think is just rubbing it in. His fellow elves are more worried than he's ever seen them. The normally joyful folds of their bell-laden caps instead drooping with melancholy and despair. The clocks in every workshop continue to count down the hours to Christmas with an unstoppable determination. He almost misses Gabriel heading towards his desk. Though, as always, his stride is more of a toy soldier swagger than anything you'd normally see from an elf. Aziraphale secretly thinks the self-importance has gotten to his head. Still, he smiles and does the traditional elvish greeting. Gabriel gets straight to the point.
You're to report to the shed with Coco.
I'm to... Oh! Aziraphale's spirits lift at the words. Did they manage to fix it?
No,
Gabriel says, and it's clear the failure had damaged his normally unshakable confidence.
They sent for someone else.
Sent for? Aziraphale frowns. Who could they possibly have sent for?
No one on earth would have the knowledge or understanding to fix the sleigh. It was an ancient magical artifact that didn't just break the established laws of physics, but had also written its own laws and then broken those as well. There were stories about how it had been shaped from time and magic itself during the first snow, when humans longed for the bounties of spring and shared the last they had among themselves.
Who did they send for?
Gabriel pulls a face.
One of Krampus's elves.
He pronounces Krampus in hushed tones and with clear distaste.
Apparently his speciality is fusing magical equipment and technology.
Aziraphale finds himself hugging his beloved striped scarf tighter around himself in surprise. Santa's workshop has never played host to the elves that work for Krampus.
those pointy fiends who reveled in mischief and ill deeds.
Oh, heavens!
I personally think it was a mistake, but the orders come from higher up.
Higher up can only mean Santa Claus himself.
Zebrafield's so busy thinking about what that means that he realizes only belatedly what Gabriel had asked of him.
And I'm to... with Coco?
The last word trembles a little. He can't think of anything he'd rather do less.
Let no one say that Santa Claus's elves don't provide refreshments to... guests,
Gabriel says firmly. It's true. The thought of anyone saying that is terrible. But Aziraphale doesn't even know if he'll be safe around one of those who dwell in the mountain. He's heard that Krampus elves have very sharp teeth and darting tongues, and that they stuff naughty children into dark and smelly sacks and make them dig coal for a year. It's too horrible to think about.
Gabriel is still looking at him, and he already knows he can't possibly say no, not after Santa Claus had apparently chosen this elf personally. The kitchens are warm. There's constant activity here, at least. The elves at the North Pole don't really get cold by design, but it's still nice to have a mug of something hot and sweet to cling to as night draws in. The gentle trill of carols going soft and harmonious as they continue to build and wrap through the night. A smiling elf in a hat adorned with bells hands a Zerophil a tray with two large mugs of their best cocoa on it, a scatter of pink marshmallows resting on top.
I hope you and your friend enjoy them, she says cheerily. Oh, he's not my friend,
Aziraphale hurries to assure her. It doesn't occur to him until he's halfway to the shed that he might have been a little rude.
Gosh, he's only been here in the vague orbit of a Krampus elf for a few minutes, and he's already in danger of losing Christmas spirit. The door is unguarded. The North Pole has no need of them, after all. The closest they have is the large, overly cheerful elf that pumps the furnace and smiles in an unsettling sort of way every time he wishes them a Merry Christmas. But Aziraphale is still flustered at the lack of supervision, at least. There's so rarely a stranger in their midst, doing who knows what at the heart of their realm. Still, he's been given a duty, and he intends to fulfill it. He pushes the door open and carefully tiptoes his way inside. Santa's sleigh is raised on two pieces of wood, the back pulled open to expose what Aziraphale suspects should contain an inner core of magic humming along with its gears and pistons and levers, but is instead quiet and cold and glistening with spots of something silver. A narrow hand comes into view and sprays more of the stuff into the sparkling and mysterious machinery within.
You can come in, you know. As long as you don't touch the antimatter, you should be fine.
The voice comes from lower down, and Zerophil adjusts accordingly. The Krampus elf is very thin, barely any cheeks to power a cheery rat at all, and he has much longer and pointier ears than Aziraphale. In place of a jolly red and green outfit, with a whimsical hat and scarf, he seems to be dressed entirely in black. His deep red hair is free and styled up from his head, as if he'd been dragging fingers through it. A pair of goggles sits just above his forehead.
I'm Aziraphale. I've been sent with cocoa for you.
He gestures with a tray he's holding. The elf looks up at him, lips briefly separating to show teeth in a way Aziraphale can't bring himself to call a smile. Crowley, can't abide the stuff. You can keep it. Aziraphale's mouth works for a moment, unsure of exactly what to say to that. He's never met an elf who didn't like cocoa before. The only time he's ever seen someone refuse cocoa was because they'd had 7 cups already.
Well, I can leave it here in case you change your mind, he says, settling the tray on part of the table, which isn't covered by an odd collection of tools.
Once the weight of it is out of his hands, he does the traditional elvish greeting. Let no one say that Santa Claus's elves can't be polite. Crowley pauses with a gear in one hand, his sharp face suddenly oddly blank.
What's that? What are you doing? He asks.
I'm greeting you in the traditional elvish fashion.
Crowley's nose crunches in judgment.
You look like someone's giving you an electric shock.
Aziraphale, suddenly self-conscious, stops greeting him.
I suppose you don't greet each other then?
Crowley's answering noise is very clearly unhappy.
I've seen every face in the mountain 1,000 times. Why would I want to encourage them to stick around?
Aziraphale finds that people constantly come to his desk to have opinions about his work, whether he greets them or not, but it's only polite, isn't it? Still, he feels compelled to answer what was clearly a question.
Maybe they'd be more inclined for a friendly...
No,
Crowley says firmly.
Or a spot of refreshment.
No, definitely not. Don't ask any mountain elves to bring you anything. Always make your own.
Aziraphale flounders a little. The idea of someone interfering with his cocoa is unthinkable.
Who would ruin perfectly good cocoa? Oh, well... You're quite welcome to do so, of course. There are machines that dispense cocoa and fizzy pop and milkshakes, and we have 46 varieties of cookie baking every day. I recommend Fridays for the good gingerbread and the peanut butter biscuits.
Crowley looks at him over a piece of machinery. And suddenly the question of why you're all constantly bouncing off the walls is answered.
I'm sorry.
Forget it. Crowley moves around the sleigh and Aziraphale finds him suddenly much closer than before. The elf is taller than him by a few inches and radiates heat, his fingers and forearms glistening the same silver as the spray he'd been using.
He has the most astonishing eyes, a burnt yellow, with pupils that are narrowed like a cat's in sunlight.
Here, hold this. Aziraphale is suddenly and unceremoniously handed a piece of machinery from the sleigh, which is shiny and golden and vibrates ever so slightly. He's immediately terrified that he's going to drop it, that he'll make that terrible situation somehow worse.
Oh, I'm not... machinery isn't really my area.
Crowley is levering another piece free from the sleigh, holding it up against the one Aziraphale is holding, and carefully listening to it.
Yes, yes, I know. Toys and such like, right? That's what all the others said.
Can't believe you've had this thing under your care for almost 1,000 years, and you've never once even serviced it.
I was under the impression it ran on the magic of Christmas, Aziraphale offers. Though he'll be the first to admit that he's not an expert. The sleigh had been here for as long as he can remember. It's almost as if it had just always existed.
Crowley's face comes to rest somewhere between disappointment and disgust, and Aziraphale tries very hard not to take them both personally.
Don't be ridiculous. It can't run on the magic of Christmas. It's not like them, you know, anthropomorphic personifications of the winter holidays.
Aziraphale gives a startled cough at hearing the words said so casually, here of all places. But he finds that he's too curious to offer the expected caution.
Yes, but the sleigh is part of him, isn't it? His carriage of duty, his connection to the world.
That no one has changed the parts out of since the first child crawled towards the heat of a campfire, no doubt. Antimatter just left to idle in a shed for half a year, honestly. Aziraphale, who has only the vaguest idea of what antimatter is, tries not to drop the sleigh part when Crowley slithers around him in an oddly boneless movement to knock upon the front of the sleigh and expose the interior there too. It's a machine. It needs to be refilled and resprayed, and to have every one of his parts cleaned and dipped in liquid magic. If I was in the mountain, I'd tell Krampus a job like this would take 2 weeks. Crowley pronounces Krampus in a way Aziraphale has never heard it before. It clips from his mouth, a soft, rolling sort of respect to the word, rather than the hushed whisper he's used to from other elves. But the last part of that sentence is more important by far.
It's 4 days until Christmas, Aziraphale protests in something of a breathless squeak. We don't have that long.
Crowley gently takes the machinery piece from him, laying it on the dustcloth he'd put down around the sleigh.
Then it would help if you could find me some eggnog. It looks like I'm going to be working through the night.
Three days until Christmas. Aziraphale had managed to convince the elves in the kitchen to make sure there was spiced eggnog for their guest. Strictly speaking, the eggnog is usually reserved for post-Christmas celebrations. He himself has always enjoyed a glass on the 26th, when the big clock ticks over to 364 days to Christmas. But, as he'd pointed out to the elves manning the stoves, this was an emergency, a race against the clock, all hands on deck, and other things Gabriel was fond of saying. He'd been told to provide for and assist Crowley however he could, and that currently meant eggnog. Crowley is still working the next morning, goggles pulled down over his eyes, spanner in one hand, various mechanical pieces settled on the dustcloth around him. The jug of eggnog Aziraphale had left him was clean as a whistle. He's reassured that he must have enjoyed it, for there to be none left. He sets the new one down with a fresh glass.
Good morning. I hope you are in fine spirits today.
He doesn't mention that Christmas may depend on it. It seems like unnecessary pressure.
I could be better, Crowley says,
something in his voice sounding quietly afraid.
You elves sure like to sing, don't you?
Aziraphale is tempted to point out that Crowley is an elf too, no matter their geographical separation. But the accusation throws him for a moment, until he realizes the faint strain of Christmas carols can be heard picking up in volume as the morning shifts roll in. Gabriel had made an announcement that the sleigh was being worked on and was now on track to be ready for Christmas Eve, so everyone had cheerfully gone back to work. Aziraphale suspects that counts as a lie, which is prime naughty behavior. But unless Santa Claus calls him out personally, that's none of his business.
A little bit of moral support to help us through the day, he says, with a little punch of enthusiasm.
And the night, apparently, Crowley mutters.
You seem to need a lot of moral support.
Aziraphale chooses not to hear the judgment in that. Gabriel had warned him that Krampus elves could be abrasive and argumentative, and that they were naturally immune to Christmas spirit. Though, honestly, Crowley seems surprisingly normal so far.
I suppose it's just something we've always done. Gosh, I don't even notice it anymore.
Some rum in the eggnog would help with the constant droning.
There's no alcohol allowed at the North Pole, Aziraphale reminds him, lest we revel a little too hard.
He suspects there's a story behind that, but he's learned that it's not something nice elves talk about.
You did mention that.
Crowley is spraying each piece of the sleigh with what looks like liquid silver before setting it down and tapping it a few times with a tuning fork.
What are you doing now?
Aziraphale asks curiously.
I'm making sure all the pieces harmonize. You wouldn't want your boss to re-enter the material plane halfway down a chimney, would you?
Aziraphale twists his fingers in his scarf, horrified by the thought.
Good heavens, no!
Exactly. And trust me, I'd be in exactly as much trouble back home if you ended up having to reconstitute a new spirit of Christmas gift-giving.
Aziraphale winces.
Please, don't phrase it like that. Santa is very beloved here.
I can't worry about offending your delicate elvish sensibilities and getting the job done to the best of my abilities. I have to get all of these pieces sprayed and dried and dipped and then screwed and levered back into the sleigh in the right order and hope to hell the new antimatter takes.
What happens if it doesn't?
Crowley looks at him, the sprayer he's holding left unthumbed for a long handful of seconds.
Christmas would be problematic for one thing, he says at last.
Oh no!
Exactly.
Is there a particular song you would prefer?
Aziraphale asks, because it seems suddenly obvious to him that Crowley has gone out of his way to try and save Christmas for them all. And his only reward has been the mistrust and uncharitable thoughts from Aziraphale's fellow elves.
They do take requests. I personally am very fond of a Christmas tree.
Ugh, no. No more blasted Christmas music. No singing, no carols, no jingling.
Aziraphale, who'd been nodding along, belatedly catches the bell on his cap and silences it. Crowley's long face is still for a moment, and then something like a smile creeps onto it.
Maybe I'll allow one jingle, Elf, just for you.
Two days until Christmas. Aziraphale is finding the whole thing fascinating, but he's being very good and keeping out of the way while Crowley starts work on dipping every piece of the sleigh that he's carefully sprayed into the glittering tray of liquid magic. The pieces that don't fit, he paints very thoroughly with a brush. He watches Crowley's process and sips at his spiced eggnog, which Crowley had insisted that he share. It's very nice, and he feels very indulgent for having a second glass. He's never had a second glass before, and he can feel the warmth settling in his stomach. He's trying to make it last.
I expected a bundt cake as a gift, or perhaps a new hat, since mine was getting a little worn, but instead there was a book at the end of my bed. I was so very surprised. A book for me. 400 pages of classic fairy tales. I couldn't tell you how many times I've read them. I know them all by heart now.
Crowley is noting something down on a long red notepad, the pencil spinning between his fingers.
Well, that's his thing, isn't it? He knows what you want, even if you don't know it yet. It's the, whatchamacallit, law of expectation. He's the spirit of bounty and hope and wishes.
Still, I'm just one elf among millions. To think that he'd go to the trouble for me.
Crowley sets the pad down and carefully lifts an uncleaned, unpainted gear, starting in with his wire brush at the dark exterior.
You went to trouble for me, though, didn't you? A Krampus elf at the North Pole. Bringing me drinks and showing me where things are. Pretty sure that's not a job that people were fighting over. I'm not an expert, but that seems to put you on the list for presents.
Aziraphale blinks at the compliment, which is all the sweeter for being so unexpected.
Thank you, Crowley. That means a lot to me. Oh, we really have been quite silly about you, listening to wild stories and scaring ourselves with tales from the mountain. You may be more abrasive than we used to, but you seem perfectly...
Don't.
I was going to say nice,
Aziraphale points out.
Exactly, Crowley complains. Krampus's elves can't be nice. It's not allowed. We're supposed to be menacing. And don't go thinking all the stories you've heard were made up. There are some elves in the mountain I wouldn't want to meet alone by a sharp drop.
Azira feels so shocked that his legs stop gently kicking.
Crowley, how could anyone be so cruel?
I mean, obviously we can't die, but it's still a long walk back up.
Forgive me for saying so, but being a Krampus elf sounds very stressful,
Aziraphale says carefully.
He can't imagine anyone would enjoy being menaced day and night,
says the elf, who listens to carols on unending repeat. It's nothing but sugar, and doesn't think he deserves presents, Crowley points out. Which is valid, he supposes. If you don't like any of those things, it wouldn't be much fun.
I suppose everyone's normal is a little different,
Aziraphale concedes.
Exactly.
though I don't suppose Krampus gives you things.
Spankings, mostly, Crowley admits. Aziraphale gasps over his eggnog, the liquid inside rolling almost to the rim.
Oh, Crowley, that's terrible.
Crowley seems amused by his concern. Don't worry so much. He doesn't use the birch twigs on us. He just likes to keep his hand in. It's a pretty easy shift, actually, and you get some ice for your bottom after.
Aziraphale is still horrified by the idea. Crowley makes it sound so commonplace.
Krampus elves have different tastes, I expect, Crowley says hurriedly.
Aziraphale passes him a cloth when he waves a hand. He's very careful with the smaller pieces, laying them out in the order they have to go back inside the sleigh. Aziraphale finishes his eggnog and thinks about poor Crowley being put over Krampus's knee, like some badly behaved child. One of those big hands coming down on his poor bottom. He makes himself stop thinking about it, though it's quite a bit harder than he expects.
So, what do you lot do after Christmas then? Crowley asks. I've always wondered.
Oh, well, once all the excitement and bustle is over, we're allowed to make merry until New Year. The day after Christmas, we have a glass of eggnog and extra cookies. Then there are parties and music and dancing. More than usual, I mean. Gabriel makes a grand and very long speech about how our Christmas spirit was prevailed once again to make it a wonderfully successful year. A late dinner is held in the great hall, and Santa Claus himself congratulates us all and takes the time to answer questions and lead us all in a big sing-song. After that, our time is our own until the first. I personally like to curl up and read my book a few times, maybe have a bit of a nap. Have you ever had a nap? They are very good.
Naps are good, Crowley agrees, settling down somewhere dark and quiet and enjoying some peace.
Do you have books in the mountain? Aziraphale asks. He's terribly curious now.
Krampus's rearm had always seemed so frightening in the tales, its denizens secretive and cruel, the idea of them being normal elves simply going about their strange business day to day and living their own lives had never occurred to him.
Eh, you wouldn't like them. They are mostly about bad things happening to naughty children.
Oddly enough, that's a theme of some of my fairy tales as well, Aziraphale admits. Let's just say that I've learned my lesson about not eating any confectionery-based houses.
Always an important lesson, Crowley says firmly, as if there was perhaps some grain of truth there. No matter how enticing the gingerbread fingers.
Aziraphale is surprised into laughter, and it somehow feels far more natural than the ones he offers during Gabriel's leery Christmas cracker jokes. Those ones always make his cheeks hurt. Crowley looks surprised, as if perhaps he'd never made anyone laugh before.
Aziraphale wonders if he should stop distracting the elf when he's doing such an important job. But he really doesn't want to leave. He's never had someone to talk to about books and naps and other places before. No one he'd ever tried to talk to had been very interested.
Crowley pulls himself up off the floor, twisting a few times until his body gives an unexpected series of clicks and pops. Then he tiptoes his way through the glistening pieces of machinery that now hum faintly with magic.
"Do you think it will work?" Aziraphale asks hopefully.
"It should do. They're as good as I can make them. Now it's up to them to put the effort in."
"The reindeers will know."
Aziraphale is confident of that, at least.
"They are the ones who alerted us to the problem to start with."
"Reindeers aren't really my area," Crowley admits. "Not enough gears."
Aziraphale finds himself laughing again.
"Twice in one day, even."
"I suppose this place is built for them," Crowley muses, head turning to look at the stalls at the far end of the shed. "And they don't mind the cold."
"Oh no, none of us do. We don't really feel it after all this time."
"You don't get cold?"
Crowley looks genuinely surprised.
"No, why would we? Oh!"
It occurs to Aziraphale that Crowley lives in the heart of the mountain, where the furnaces run all day and coal is shoveled from the smoky depths.
"Oh, what a terrible host I've been! It never occurred to me that this place might be unpleasantly chilly for you. I'm so sorry."
He slips down from his stool, unwinding his beloved scarf and drawing it free, then looping it around Crowley's long neck. The dangling halves hang down his chest, where he's still half spotted with silver and magic. It looks very fetching on him.
"There, nice and toasty warm."
Crowley says in return, which seems like a thank you. It turns out his cheeks can go a cheerful red just fine. One day until Christmas. Aziraphale finds the shed a frenzy of activity on Christmas Eve. Every piece of the sleigh that Crowley had so carefully cleaned and sprayed and rejuvenated is being quickly and efficiently replaced back inside. Crowley's goggles are askew, and Aziraphale can see that one sleeve is ripped in two places as he works feverishly with a wrench. He doesn't seem to have noticed, so intent is he upon his task.
"There are 306 pieces, which have to go back in exactly as they came out," he says fiercely, a steam-like hiss to his voice. "And then we hope to hell everything holds."
To Aziraphale's untrained eye, most of those pieces still seem to be led around them. But Crowley is working so very hard, he's sure that he'll manage to do it on time.
"It's been strangely quiet out there," Crowley adds. "I don't know what that means."
"I got them to stop the carrots, so you could concentrate,"
Aziraphale says quietly. Crowley looks at him over the top of the sleigh.
"That was good of you," he says, the words awkward and new in his mouth.
Aziraphale gets the feeling people don't do things for Crowley very often.
"Though you realize the mountain is a cacophony of noise and smoke, and things being on fire pretty much all the time."
"Yes, well, I know how much it was putting your nerves on edge."
"Making me do a job in 12 hours that should take at least 4 days is putting my nerves on edge," Crowley complains.
"And I usually have nerves of steel, if anyone asks."
Aziraphale fully believes it. He doubts Crowley is afraid of anything.
I have some eggnog on the go for you, and some sandwiches. I'm not an expert by any means on human food, but Raphael has been in research and development for years, and he says that cheese and pickle is traditional.
Crowley stops briefly to pop his goggles up. I would kill for a cheese and pickle sandwich right now. That seems a bit dramatic and is hopefully hyperbole, but Aziraphale understands the sentiment. He slips down from the stool.
Then I shall fetch some for you, though you have to promise to wipe your hands before you eat them. You look like tinsel.
Crowley takes a second to look at his silver and gold-spotted hands, and then offers Aziraphale a rare but lovely smile. Afternoon turns to evening, the sky darkening around them, and Crowley is waist-deep in the back of the sleigh, frantically screwing something back into place. The dust cloth across the floor still has far too many pieces on it, far too many, at least 100, and Aziraphale can't believe that they'll all be easy to put back inside.
I shouldn't be here distracting you, he says quietly. You have so much to do, and there's so little time.
No, Crowley calls from somewhere deep in the workings of one of the oldest machines in the world. No, stay. The thing probably appreciates someone in here giving off jolly Christmas vibes.
Do you think?
Crowley makes an indistinct noise, one of his black boots leaving the floor as he stretches in deep for a lost screw. Can't hurt. Go on. Tell me about your favorite Christmas.
His favorite Christmas? What a question. Oh, I couldn't possibly. There's been so many.
But somehow he finds himself talking about some of them anyway. About the year that Dancer ate Gabriel's best hat, and the year that the porridge machine wouldn't stop making porridge, no matter how many times they pressed the button. The year Uriel put too much mint in the candy canes, and the workshop smelled like toothpaste for a week. The year there was constant snow, and Santa Claus told them all a story on New Year's Eve. They've all been wonderful Christmases, all very memorable Christmases. But some of them were definitely more memorable than others.
And Sandalphon wouldn't let anyone in, so he was left to fend for himself, save for the occasional cookies some of us managed to slip under the door.
Aziraphale finishes, and only when he said the last two words does he realize that it's almost 11 p.m. It's almost 11 p.m. and Santa Claus always leaves at 11 p.m.
Crowley!
I know, Crowley says sharply, and he's on his dusty knees rolling up the sheets and then levering the blocks out from underneath the sleigh.
Crowley!
Aziraphale says again, because he has far too many feelings to hold them all. There's no time left, and if Santa can't leave in his sleigh, then he can't leave at all, and Christmas won't happen. His fidgeting hands are caught in warm fingers, and he's pulled gently to his feet. Aziraphale, harness the reindeer, Crowley tells him. The words take his breath away. He'd been hoping desperately, but it's so very late now.
Is it finished? Will it work?
Christmas miracles are your job, not mine, Crowley points out, before heading to the edge of the shed and the cylinder of swirling blue light that had been the first thing prized free.
Magic is one thing, but do you have any idea how much energy you need to circumnavigate the globe and hold half the world in a temporal pocket?
I don't, Zerophil admits.
Right, then don't ask about the antimatter. Come on, Ev, chop chop.
Zerophil hurries to the door and does something he's never done before in his life. He pulls the big whistle. Far down the other end of the shed, 8 sets of hooves can be heard stamping an impatient beat. The elves that slip in through the doors don't talk amongst themselves. They hurry inside in perfect time with each other, little halos of illuminated bells atop their heads. They lift reins and harnesses from the wall and then open all the stalls. Zerophil has always heard how efficient they could be, but it's astonishing how quickly they draw the team of reindeer into formation and toss straps and buckles and reins to each other until the whole sleigh is manned and ready to go in less than 2 minutes. Only then do the big doors open. Santa Claus is bigger than most people think, but today of all days he seems to fill the whole shed. Zerophil holds his hands together tightly and takes him in as he moves towards them. His suit is a rich, deep red velvet, the trim made from the softest fur, combed from animals long lost to time. He heads for the sleigh and lays a big hand on it, and he smiles. The sack he carries, which holds not so much presents as the stuff that dreams and imaginations are made of, is set behind him as he climbs into his seat and lifts the reins. Zerophil can't help but take a peek at the big clock above the doors. Christmas Eve, Kingdom of Kiribati, 23:04. They are 4 minutes late. Santa Claus is looking at the clock as well, but he doesn't seem worried. Instead, there's a cheery smile and a twinkle in his eye, and then the click-click of reins. 8 reindeer brace and then dip. The giant sleigh seems to shiver in place before it sweeps forward across the polished floor, gaining speed in a rush and a clatter of hooves. It takes the whole length of the shed in seconds, then reaches the edge and glides out into the snow. It digs a sliding series of grooves for a handful of heartbeats, and then surges up into the air in a shower of sparkles and light.
Ho, ho, ho!
Echoes out through the night. Zerophil's cap hits the floor with a gentle jingle as he bounces and claps hard enough to make his hands sting. The other elves are clapping too, less stern now that the sleigh is on its way. They collect up their gear and then hurry off to prepare meals for the hungry reindeers that will return.
You did it, Crowley! You did it! You fixed the sleigh and saved Christmas!
Zerophil reaches for his new friend, overjoyed and wanting terribly to share it.
Oh, I could kiss you!
Go on then, Crowley says, which sounds like half a dare, and have some strange, urgent thing.
I shall,
Zerophil warns, before he's feeling far too much not to demonstrate it in some way. Crowley doesn't move, though, so Zerophil catches the edge of the scarf he's given him and drags him in, kisses him right on the mouth, where he's so very warm and a little damp, and there are soft vibrations from the noise he's making. Aziraphale had never kissed anyone before, but it seems terribly hard to stop once you've started. Crowley's mouth takes kisses with a wonderful sort of eagerness, pushing back with equal pressure, and then not pushing back at all, but opening and... Oh, that's very nice as well. He discovers that some of the things they say about Krampus elves are true, particularly the long tongue. Aziraphale, who finds it hard sometimes to ask for another helping of pudding, discovers that he's suddenly willing to be greedy. Crowley is making lovely noises, though, and they don't seem to be any sort of complaint. Still, they have to break apart at some point, and seeing Crowley with his eyes wide and his red mouth, knowing that Aziraphale had been the one to kiss him first, makes him immediately want to kiss him again.
Aziraphale,
Crowley tips away from his attempt.
Oh, don't stop.
Aziraphale finds that he's pouting. He's not sure he's ever pouted before. Crowley laughs against his cheek.
I think we've mostly passed kissing and headed into something that's going to get you a written warning, he points out.
It occurs to Aziraphale that he had been making rather excellent progress at working his hands up under the black shirt Crowley's wearing to spread them on his delightfully warm skin. He can feel the color in his cheeks as he slithers his hands free. He suddenly understands the peril of something being naughty and nice at the same time, which is rather shocking.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry. The excitement, it got away from me.
Don't apologize on my account, Crowley says hurriedly. I'm all for excitement.
Aziraphale blushes harder because it's quite clear what Crowley means by that.
Just maybe not in one of the North Pole's most traveled rooms at Christmas.
He makes, it has to be said, a very good point.
Well, I would suggest one of the storerooms.
Aziraphale makes a point of gesturing in their direction while pretending not to.
Where we keep extra blankets and hay, but I'm sure that would be terribly naughty, and I couldn't possibly.
Crowley slips a hand into his and tucks him gently towards the wooden door.
I'm a Krampus elf. We are naughty by design.
The room is warm, filled with bales of hay and stacked stools, shelves full of boxed treats and folded blankets. Crowley wastes no time pressing Aziraphale back into the closed door and drawing his cap off with a little jingle. Aziraphale kisses him again, kisses him and lets Crowley run fingers through his hair and call him fluffy and tempting and soft. And then he lets him undo his big buttons and push off his elven coat.
I've never snuck off before,
Aziraphale says breathlessly.
Is that a euphemism for sex? Crowley asks.
Aziraphale opens his mouth to say,
Of course not. That would be silly. I suppose it is, he says instead.
Crowley's kisses turn gentle, and Aziraphale isn't sure whether he's touched or disappointed.
Well then, I'm honored you wanted to sneak off with me.
You're lovely,
Aziraphale tells him honestly.
The loveliest elf I've ever seen.
You don't have to be nice to me, Crowley protests. You've already got me in a storeroom promising to do whatever you want.
There's a lot of honesty there, and something that almost sounds wounded. Aziraphale kisses him quiet, slithering his chilly fingers up inside Crowley's shirt again, and then urging him out of it. He wants very much to see more of him, all of him if he's amenable. Though it turns out the hay is more comfortable when you toss a blanket over it. They take turns with each other's clothing. Aziraphale shyly encourages the other elf to peel his long-sleeved jumper over his head, sending his hair into disarray. Crowley's boots are softer than they look, but his trousers are impossibly tight. It's a wonder he can breathe in them. Aziraphale's soft upper body is nothing like Crowley's wiry frame, and he spends a moment enjoying the contrast when they lie together, until his wandering fingers hit somewhere Crowley is ticklish, and he warns that he'd never live that down if it got out, to Aziraphale's amusement. They kiss again. It's like they can't stop, though there's a deep and open desperation to it now. With their clothes stripped away, they are free to investigate more differences. Crowley has extra ribs, angular hips, and his nails are much longer and harder than Aziraphale's. He takes the opportunity to examine Crowley's ear points too, then much more shyly the plane of his stomach and the hard line of his cock. The breathless noises Crowley makes at the careful touch are the loveliest things he's ever heard.
You're beautiful.
Pfft.
Don't pfft me. Lying is naughty, and I would never do such a thing.
He wants to say more. Wants to confess that Crowley is the most fascinating being he's ever met, but there's a hand around the stiff, naked jut of his own erection, long fingers grasping where he's most needy, and he's too new to the sensation to do anything but gasp and shiver and cling to him. No one has ever touched him like this.
Be a good elf for me, Crowley hums in his ear. Aziraphale has no breath to form a reply. He is Crowley's from that point, no matter what he wants.
What Crowley wants is apparently to drag him to the edge of the hay bale, spread his thighs, and then open his fiercely hot mouth around Aziraphale's cock. He's thinking so many lewd words, but they can't be naughty when they feel like this. Sweet and joyful and wonderful and rhythmic. Aziraphale catches Crowley's burnished red hair, knocking his goggles askew while he bobs and sucks and pulls at the root of him with that incredibly talented tongue. It doesn't stop. It just builds and builds, the breath leaving him in staggered punches, breathy whines straining out when he tries to make words. Until it's too much. Aziraphale thinks he wails, legs drawing up to squeeze at Crowley's shoulders, when all that beautiful sensation fills him up and then pours out of him.
Jingle bells, he thinks in a feverish sort of haze.
He feels so full and so soft and so well loved. Crowley raises between his legs to lay against him and kiss him, and Aziraphale loops an arm around his neck to hold him there for a moment while he recovers. He finds the taste of himself in Crowley's mouth, and it's a shocking confirmation of how deep he'd ventured in him, how sweetly Crowley had offered the heat of his mouth, where Xerophil had been unbearably needy. He finds that suddenly he wants to give in exchange. He wants to be the one who's plumped and caught open and warmed from the inside. He murmurs that quiet against the sharp point of Crowley's ear, gets a shuddering breath in reply, and the curve of sharp, sharp teeth at the meat of his jaw.
Up you get, then. I want you to be greedy for it.
Xerophil dazedly rises, blushes under kisses to the soft curve of his breast and the ball of his shoulder, while Crowley slips a hand behind his knee and lifts it, opening him up. It's a vial of slippery magic that Crowley opens and uses to stretch him on two fingers, the warm burn of them thrilling and new and promising experiences Xerophil had never had, never dreamed he'd want so much. Crowley watches him from a kneeling position, all golden eyes and long jaw, his own desire standing stiff from his lap, a bead of fluid already swelling at the head.
"You're a lovely thing, Elf," Crowley says,
and his focus suddenly becomes almost too intent, the way he rubs his thumb where Xerophil is stretched and eager, the color of magic painting the skin behind his boards and bringing every nerve to life.
"I want you to show me what you like. I've never been soft, never been nice, so you have to show me. I want to see you move on my cock, want to see your body take me the way that best pleases you."
"Yes," Xerophil says breathlessly, because that sounds perfect. Crowley draws him down to the floor, onto a riot of blankets and straw. He's coaxed to kneel astride him, sat above Crowley's cock, so long and slender and reddened for him, and then he's urged to sink down, to meet him where Crowley has left him wet and ready. The first push is a hot stretch, an unfamiliar intrusion where no one has ever been before. Xerophil is sinking onto him, his body helpless to do anything but open for that hard length of cock. He can hear Crowley hissing, sharp fingers digging at his hips and urging him down, urging himself in, until Xerophil is seated panting on the narrow spread of Crowley's lap.
"Oh, it feels like so much. Every tiny movement jostling and stretching and touching parts of himself he's gone six lifetimes unaware of.
Oh, it's so much."
"Xerophil."
There's affection there, but also a strained sort of urgency, a needy thing that Xerophil can feel the first faint echoes of as well. He lifts slowly, works his hips in testing pushes, feeling Crowley shift and move inside him. He can see the way Crowley's eyes follow the slow bounce of his body, and the way Xerophil's stiff cock bobs and pats his stomach in a steady tug of pleasure. It's strange and new, and when he plants his hands on Crowley's chest and draws up, he hears the slick wet sound of his body giving Crowley pleasure in turn. He can't hold a moan. The first few attempts to rise are nervous, the second more confident, and then he's just moving in Crowley's lap, panting hot little sounds of delight while Crowley's nails dig at his hips and thighs. The shelves shake gently, the bell-adorned edges of the blankets giving a soft and rhythmic jingle every time Aziraphale's buttocks meet Crowley's thighs. There's a delicious warmth to the friction, a hungry, needy thing clawing at him that feels different to the first time. Crowley is saying his name over and over, pulling him down harder and tighter every time. The shelves continue to bang, less gently now, the bells jingle, their bodies giving a wet smack every time they meet. Aziraphale. Sharp nails dig in his breast, but the unpleasant sting is immediately soothed by careful fingers.
I'm sorry.
Aziraphale drags Crowley's hand back up, lets those fingers grope at his chest and pinch his nipples, and it's all so much at once. He loses his rhythm, moaning, grinding desperately when Crowley's cock rubs at something sensitive within him. He squeezes down, gasping at the rolling bliss of the sensation.
Oh, fuck!
Crowley's knees draw up, hands reaching out to catch him, along his bursting free. Aziraphale can feel the wet pulses inside him, the twitch and throb of Crowley's pleasure. He forces himself to stop, to enjoy how naked Crowley's face looks. The edge is so close for Aziraphale too, he's already shivery with it, and all it takes is Crowley reaching out, grasping him in slippery fingers and urging him to come. Aziraphale's whole body clenches and then cracks open like a candy cane.
Crowley!
Aziraphale stays upright after, his body flushed and drowsy, his pleasure painted across Crowley's stomach and chest. Clever fingers are still gently milking shivers from him, and it's exquisite and too much at the same time. Eventually, Crowley's cock softens and eases from him. He finds himself very sad to lose it, but he minds less when Crowley draws him down into the blanket-covered hay, where they lay together, sweaty and warm, hands tangled as Christmas Eve moves to Christmas Day. Three Hundred and Sixty-Four Days Until Christmas. Aziraphale can smell cinnamon and matches, the faint sweetness of eggnog, and the sharp bright tang that he knows is the exhaust from Santa's sleigh. There's the soft sensation of something moving in the curls of his hair, which is terribly pleasant. If he could purr like a cat, then he believes that he would right now. The straw is much more comfortable than it had looked, and it's toasty warm beneath one of the sleigh blankets that Crowley had pulled around them both sometime in the night. He snuggles deeper into the inviting curve of Crowley's neck. It had turned out to be the other elf's fingers in his hair, because they sliver free with a guilty sort of apology. Aziraphale kisses the long curve of his throat, just because he can.
Merry Christmas!
Happy Yule,
Crowley counters, something amused to the words. He really does have wonderfully long hands. They slide down Aziraphale's waist and then spread on his back almost endlessly. Aziraphale supposes they should get up, Santa will be back eventually. The reindeers will need to be unharnessed and fed and brushed. He reluctantly stretches and eases himself to a sit, only to stop when he spots the shine of wrapping paper on the small table next to their makeshift bed.
Goodness!
What?
I think Santa came while we were sleeping.
Isn't that what he's supposed to do? Crowley says. Which would be both terribly sensible and true if Xerophil wasn't currently faced with the knowledge that he'd been snuggled up in here with a Krampus elf at the time. Not that there was anything wrong with that, of course. He reaches out, and he can tell before he touches the paper,
feels the heft and the shape of it, that it's another book.
He can't help the little gasp of wonder and delight, but far from teasing him for it, it makes Crowley tip his head against the Xerophil's and gently kiss his ear. More stories for you to learn by heart, Crowley guesses. You deserve them, Xerophil.
Oh!
Lifting the book from the small table had revealed something else behind it, a smaller gift box wrapped in red and gold striped paper. The text says, "To Crowley from Santa Claus."
There's one for you, too.
There's what? Crowley's voice had gone croaky with disbelief.
He left a gift for you.
Xerophil hands over the box, watches Crowley take it in his long hands, sharp nails prodding carefully at the taped edges and bow. I've never, he swallows audibly, never had a present before. What am I supposed to... How do I open it? Xerophil finds himself filled with such unbearable affection that it leaves him breathless.
You can carefully unstick where it's been taped and wrapped, or you can find a gap between the paper and tear it away in pieces. But be careful not to damage what's inside.
Crowley nods, and after a moment's thought, he starts carefully picking at the tape. The gift is revealed slowly, a tall box that seems to twist open. Crowley clearly finds it familiar because he stops for a moment, seems to take a deep breath, and then wraps a hand around it. Xerophil watches the rounded top lever up to reveal a small green plant tucked in a bed of rich soil. It has four leaves and a stout little stem. It could never survive in the brittle cold of the North Pole, but it might, if cared for, survive in the slope of a mountain.
Oh, it's beautiful, Xerophil says.
Crowley gently touches a leaf, encouraging it to stretch upwards. It is, he agrees. The end.